Hey guys, so since the start of this year, actually last spring, I suffered an injury and it happened while I was squatting. And as a doctor, you guys know, we should always lift with proper form. In the last few months, I've been to countless physical therapists, physicians, PM&R, sports, and I'm just now finally coming around. That being said, one thing that has stayed consistent is I've been leaning on to the help of my colleagues in sports medicine, in the physical therapy world, the occupational therapy world, chiropractors, and such. And it really taught me a lesson that sometimes when you want to accelerate your healing, your growth, your success at one thing, you should lean on to the wisdom of those who have more expertise than yourself. So my course is coming back, and usually with my course, I believe it is a guide. Much like my physicians have been a guide for me, my physical therapists have been a guide for me, giving me exercises to do at home as I heal this injury. But the more I think about it, I realize coaching is very similar, especially when you're dealing with a fixed career goal of getting into residency. And this is why I've created this IMG Roadmap program, which is a life course and coaching program, and it'll be coming back soon in April of 2024. So I want to make sure that you're ready. You can go right now to drninaloom.com/waitlist and put your name on the waitlist so I can notify you once my doors open. See you on the other side.
The IMG Roadmap is the only podcast dedicated to coaching international medical graduates and success blueprints for this unique pathway. I am Dr. Nina Loom, your host, a previous IMG turned hospital medicine physician, healthcare administrator, speaker, and coach. I empower, encourage, and equip you with actionable steps that you can take towards the residency position of your dreams.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the IMG Roadmap Podcast. Clearly, I've lost my voice. And you would think I was partying, but I was not. I just got a cold and it just got me. I think I got swimmer's ear and it ended up being some kind of upper respiratory infection. Whatever. We move. Today's guest is Dr. Justin Morera. He just finished MS4 at St. George's University in the Caribbean, and it recently matched into radiation oncology, which is obviously an advanced specialty, and we'll talk a lot more about advanced specialties. But welcome to the show, Justin. How are you doing?
Hey, good. Glad to be here.
Right. I wish you guys could see Justin because he has like a podcaster's mic going on right now, and I'm here for it. Most people are usually doing this podcast recording with like their iPhones, and iPhones give high quality audio, but I'm here for high quality, especially on a day where my voice is failing us. So Justin,
yes,
tell us where you're calling from today.
So I'm currently in Miami, Florida. I'm feeling a little bit of the bug as well. Whatever you have, I think the cold weather we just recently got has done something. I'm not sure. But anyway, so I'm here and, I'm originally from Jackson, Mississippi. And, as part of my whole process, I'm currently about to move to Fort Lauderdale to start my transitional year. So I'm just going to be moving about 30 miles north and add a new place to the long list of places I've been on this journey.
Absolutely. So can you paint the picture for the listener? Because right now we're obviously recording and there's some component of video, but a lot of them are going to be listening like to an audio file. So can you paint the picture of, where you started out undergrad, where you went to medical school, and really how you're to this point where you're getting ready to go start your transitional year?
Yeah. So, my path has definitely not been a straight line like most of us, especially those of us that go the IMG route. And I'll say, if I could put it briefly, it kind of started with me going to undergrad school. Obviously, I went to University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. I was a biology major, and then I took about 6 to 7 years of pursuing other passions, namely music and a lot of other things at the time. And basically, decided when I graduated undergrad that medicine will always be there, and that is my ultimate destination. However, I have so many passions, and I just am this person that wants to, explore the world and play and create. And, and so I wanted to take that time to do all of that, and I enjoyed it. It was great. And then, of course, I started with medicine, and I went to Ross University, and I just graduated, like you said, in December. So, I was basically graduated during the match process. So during my interviews, I was able to communicate that. I don't think that that's that important to be graduated. A lot of my cohorts that are coming with me to the transitional year program that I matched, a lot of them aren't graduated. There's no issue with that, I don't think. And I certainly don't think it applies if you are a person that's applying to a competitive specialty, quote unquote. And I think that because for me, I applied to most of these programs and got interviews to these radiation oncology programs without ever having step two on my record until February of 2024. So that was not something that was communicated to me by my advisors, as something that would be problematic. I mean, they hinted at it, but I essentially just thought it would be best for me to take things into my own hands, go on my process without having step two. And I made that decision, for myself. And there was a lot against me at the time, but anyway, it's just sort of going on, but
No. I think that you already kind of really went to the meat of our conversation today, which is, planning out an application into a competitive specialty. And I think at the beginning, I may have gotten it wrong. You actually went to Ross University, not St. George's. I misspoke in the beginning for anyone listening. So I want to, we could take it a, step at a time. It's like, how do you eat a big elephant? It's one bite at a time. So let's start out with, your medical journey. It sounds like you're sharing with us that you completed medical school somewhat off the usual cycle, which would make you somewhat non-traditional. And then secondly, you had to complete step two CK as far as getting your result back after your medical school graduation date. Is that accurate or?
So I took step two in November, and I got the score back and actually uploaded into ERAS around, I want to say it was like early January maybe. And so, once I got it, I had to go through more of the, documents and certifications, the ECFMG and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I essentially was going through the match process, getting interviews, doing interviews without a step two score. I only had step one. It didn't even come up in any of my interviews. And I guess what I want to communicate there is something I just alluded to previously, which is, every school has their advisors, and I definitely don't want to disparage any of them, but I do want to say that it's a little less daunting and a little less complicated than I think a lot of us are given the illusion of. And I'm just a living example of that. I mean, I just, I don't, I can share, and I'm happy to share as transparently as possible every single thing that I did. And I would give anyone the same roadmap as the podcast is so aptly named. And, I would hope that it would be the same outcome, because essentially the only thing that I did was just be true to myself. The only thing that I did was I knew what I wanted to do. I was authentic about communicating that in my personal statement. I genuinely tried in every way to explore this specialty in the time that I had before my interviews and during. I reached out, I had mentors, both like email, like long form communication, correspondence with radiologists, radiation oncologists, people that are ACR, American College of Radiology certified, and that just understand that whole realm. Again, I just wanted to be genuine and authentic when the time came for someone to see my ERAS application and say, this is obvious that this person wants to do this. And it wasn't like I was this person who was born and I'm like, I'm going to be a doctor when I grow up. I never thought that when I was a child. I just wanted to live life and explore life and be a creative person. And leading up to how I discovered this specialty, we can go all over the place with that. But essentially, what I want to say is just, I hope that people do their diligence in researching and finding out exactly what they want to do. And don't worry about what Reddit is telling you about, the numbers and the this and the that. And you don't have a chance because you're an international student and you're from another country and we don't like you and blah, blah, blah. This isn't an IMG friendly specialty. That's not an IMG friendly hospital. That's not an IMG friendly program. I just ignored all that. Okay. And I just encourage everyone to do that. If you know what you want to do and you have done your part to authentically communicate in your application, I don't see why you would not get your interviews and, just do your best to put on your best personality. And, the cards are going to lay where they lay. And hopefully you're the one that's chosen and they're the one that you choose and everything's beautiful. But I think it just starts with that. It really just starts with, there's all these great little quizzes online, like Student Doctor Network has one. There's, I think, AAMC or one of those AAM or one of these programs have another little specialty doctor quiz. I encourage people to take that because it won't tell you exactly what you should do, but it will definitely point you into some, like, you know, a top 10 of like, oh, okay, this speaks to my personality. I'm starting to understand what my life would look like in this career, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, first, maybe we should even define the specialty for some people, because it's not a common specialty that IMGs seek out. I think one, they don't seek it out because they don't even know that it exists. And then two, they don't seek it out because when they do find out, it's later on in the course. And it's so much like, why would I go for that? It's probably not going to be, I'm not going to be eligible for it. And a lot of that is just based on hearsay or based on data. But, you know, radiation oncology, guys, is specialized training in performing radiation treatment, usually with people with cancerous diagnosis, but even non-cancerous conditions, okay? And these physicians, radiation oncologists, can usually specialize further within their training pathway into even more complex or rare cancer conditions. In the United States, you have to complete a preliminary or transitional year because it's considered an advanced specialty prior to going into the secondary or advanced specialty of radonc. So, you know, Justin, how did you find the specialty? What was it about radonc that caught your eye?
You know, it's so funny, when I started to communicate to my cohorts, my classmates, you know, that I was definitely doing radiation oncology, and even up till now matching, you know, and folks reaching out to me about it, you know, it's always just so much confusion about what it is. You know, I get like, oh, did you have to do, like, is that a separate match? Like, did you go through NRMP to do that? Or, you know, oh, do you have to do radiology first and then you do that? Or like, is that its own specialty or is that a fellowship or what? Yeah, it's own specialty, and it's a 5-year specialty with a transitional year or a preliminary year, as we've alluded. And there's something about radiation oncology that for me, again, I could go all over the place. I mean, I have some personal connections with, you know, how cancer, you know, has affected my life, not personally, but my mother was diagnosed with cancer when I was 17 and when I was 15, and she passed away when I was 17. So, you know, that is a circumstance in my life that did definitely play a part in choosing radiation oncology. But, you know, next to that is what makes me certain that I will be fulfilled throughout this journey is just how much it speaks to my personality. You know, there's a lot of technology involved, and there's also a lot of philosophy involved in this specialty. You're constantly, you know, thinking of principles of life and principles of physics, which is a large part of our training. You know, you basically are getting some nominal version of a PhD when you do this specialty, because you have to take medical physics and you have to take radiobiology and immunobiology. So it's a lot there just in terms of disciplines that you have to be aware of and connect. And there is just something so fascinating about the ability to, you know, say that what you do is you literally harness the power of the sun to treat diseases, or you harness the power of, you know, like in radio frequency ablation, you were literally using electromagnetism to treat cancer cells while protecting surrounding normal healthy tissue. You know, this stuff is just amazing to me. It's metaphysical. It's beyond what a lot of other specialties think about and talk about when they talk about medicine. And it's just perfect for my personality in that way. And then, of course, lastly, you know, the type of patients that you're working with, you know, I'm always stopped, you know, are you sure you want to do cancer? Are you sure you want to be an oncologist? And, you know, to that, I just really say, you know, look, everyone's suffering in the hospital, you know, everything's emotional. Everything is sad. There's no reason why a patient with cancer is any more sad than anyone else that's suffering or dying or ailing from something. So, you know, I just see it as a duty to, you know, understand these people as patients that have a very, very unique disease with unique challenges, but, you know, not considering it as like, I'm going into this field of just pure, you know, despair and depression. And I think that, you know, I've noticed that in a lot of other oncologists, they share the same sort of optimistic outlook, which is great. Those are the type of people I hope we want, you know? Yeah.
So I think a lot of people are going to have questions too, as to like, you know, did you do a rotation in radonc? How did you know you wanted to do the specialty? As far as, it's not a primary specialty that you get exposed to in med school. It's part of your original curriculum. It's one of those that you kind of have to seek out. especially because it's not a core rotation. Maybe as an elective, if you're already like aware of where you're headed with it. I think a lot of people also want to do oncology, but they don't realize that there's more than just medical oncology, which is doing an internal medicine residency and then subspecializing in hematology and oncology, but doing a pediatrics residency and then subspecializing in pediatric hematology and oncology. This is still another way of practicing oncology, but with the benefits and the powers of physics, like you mentioned, in using different ways to target treatment plans for patients. I just want to point out one thing because some people may be like, they've never heard about radiation oncology in general. It's typically a 4-year residency program for those of you who are wondering. And so that's a 4-year residency after medical school. And as we mentioned before, you typically have to complete some type of primary medical year, and then that would be your secondary year. Or you would go into an advanced specialty as your second year. So, and you can tell us a little bit if that differs from your own program that you'll be potentially going into. But we just want to hear a little bit more about, knowing that it's not a traditional specialty that we all get to participate in medical school. How did you maneuver that?
Yeah, so I would encourage people that are interested in the specialty to visit something called ROVR, which is Radiation Oncology Virtual Elective Rotation. That's what it stands for. This was something that I unfortunately was not able to secure a rotation through, but it is a good option for IMGs who are interested in the specialty to find a location to do this virtually, which obviously will never replace being there in person and doing the things in person. But because, as you mentioned, radiation oncology is such a niche field and it is so spread out all over the place, depending on where you are, you might have a tough time finding a spot for a formal rotation, which is what happened with me. So my experience was through a mentor, someone that I had actually met early in my clinical years and started having the ruminations that I would want to do radiation oncology. It just happened to be happenstance that we met and we developed a relationship, and he was kind enough to let me come to his private practice, teach me a lot of things, show me a lot of things. I also did an observership with an actual hospital, a university hospital, who I actually did have an interview with. And but it was just like a 3-day observership, nothing formal and nothing that I could put on my application either. So these were just things that I did for my own edification. And I basically, I communicated this openly to all the programs. They all know that I didn't have a radiation oncology rotation and it was never an issue. They know that I was very interested based on the effort that I put in to try to do this. And as I mentioned, the Rover situation, almost every program in the country has a Rover, not all of them, but a lot of them. And, there's, I mean, Yale and University of Miami here next to me, tons of them. So it's a website, just rover.com or rovereducation.com or something like that. They'll find it. You Google it, you definitely find it.
When you said that, I actually pulled it up. So Rover is the right name, Radiation Oncology Virtual Education Rotation. And the URL is redoncvirtual.com. We'll also have that in the show notes. I'm on their website right now and I see that they have medical student resources. They actually have an upcoming medical student networking session as well. So I think that this is definitely a great resource for anyone who is like, wondering what their options are within this sort of niche specialty. So also just piggybacking off of that, looking at the 2022 match results, actually, for the matched US seniors, so US medical students who made it into RedOnc, the median score was about like a 243. This was obviously in the time of numerical scores. However, the 25th percentile was anywhere from 228 to 75th percentile of 253. Now, step one is now pass fail. So that may differ a little bit from this data we're looking at. For step two CK, however, that score ranged anywhere from about 241 to 259 as well. And that's just for match. It doesn't mean that if you don't have those scores, you can't apply. Just kind of pointing you guys in the direction of what we have from the NRMP as of recent. And just some other key things to point out about the specialty as well. It actually has a moderate IMG match rate, like looking at this data as well. Fewer IMGs apply into the specialty from what I can tell, but it doesn't mean that they don't get it, right? A match rate for US IMGs into RedOnc in the 2022 match was in the, let's see, what did it read at 54%. So I mean, I feel like that's not very different from the general match rate in the main match for other specialties. So something that, you guys who are out there or have never thought about or you're starting to think about, hopefully Justin would give us a way to connect you guys with him by the end of the episode so that you can
ask more questions, but I think that this is definitely something to start looking into for those who are truly interested. So Justin, kind of back to your medical journey, what kind of application were you presenting for a Radong match? And I kind of want to break it down into two phases. We could talk first about USMLE, and if you're open talking performance or not, that's up to you. And then we'll segue into some more stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I guess to start, which one would you like to start with? Maybe the
Let's start with like the basics. People always want to know scores. I feel like we've been traumatized by scores. I would be in my DMs and someone's like, here are my scores. Tell me what my chances are. I'm like, it doesn't work like that. But I think we're all traumatized by scores, and people always want to, like, when they're listening, they're trying to rule themselves out, right? They're always like, what scores does he have? He's probably better than me. And so I don't have, and I just, let's just answer the question the listeners want to know.
That's why I hesitate to hit you with any numbers, but I am happy to do that if folks want to reach out to me. I don't know. Maybe you give me your opinion on sharing the numbers. I'm happy with the numbers. I'm comfortable to share that, but I think really the overarching thing is, in that data that you just gave, 243 to 259. I was in there, and on step one, mine was a numerical, and it was pretty decent, but certainly a huge, huge, huge jump from step one to step two, which I credit to a lot of things. One, I had to take comp a few times to pass it, and all that did was just, get me super, super ready for step two. I'm not sure if your listeners are aware, but comp is like a sort of like a prerequisite exam to step two that most schools, sort of force you to take before they let you sit for step two, just to make sure that you're going to pass it and like you're good to go because you don't want to fail that exam. So anyway, that definitely helped me in a lot of ways. I also had reached out to, mentors, other classmates. I think that that's a theme that folks can connect there is that I think that it takes a village, and I reached out to everybody. I was constantly reaching out to folks, and I guess maybe that's a good transition to like what my application actually looked like. I just to start, I used all 10 of the experiences that are available. I used every single one, and I tried my best to, again, paint a picture of someone who's me, but who is interested in this profession. And to me, that's someone, that is, I guess in any specialty you're applying to, you should be doing this. But it's communicating the type of person that everyone wants to work with, someone well-rounded. And that is the point of your application, in my opinion. And that should be the number one priority, is making your application look like you are a well-rounded person. I have a cycling trip that was for children and adults with mental and physical disabilities on there. I have all my music stuff, like me being on MTV and traveling across the country, touring and recording all over the world or the country, having our music broadcasted all over the world. I have some like volunteer guitar mentorship stuff here in Miami. There's also, I played professional soccer while I was living in Barbados when I was a Ross student there. So I was doing my best to just show that I have a lot of passions, and being a radiation oncologist is just another one of those. And obviously, communicating with the people that are going to write your letter of recommendation is also something that you should really consider in terms of what the feedback and what the insight that that letter writer can share on your behalf. I had one that was a radiation oncologist, I had one that was an internal medicine doctor, and one that is the program director for general surgery at a hospital that I rotated with. He was my preceptor. So these were all three people that have some association with, radiation oncology, whether you're admitting or you're consulting or, you're performing like in surgery, in some cases. I just think that that helped in terms of why I was selecting the actual letter writers from their backgrounds, and I just think that that also communicated a depth of my clinical abilities that's also very important. I guess lastly, I will say the big thing in radiation oncology is research. I only had two research experiences to share. I had more research experience from like prior years that like just go so far back. But the two that I did like during medical school, basically it was for a conference. It was just a publication for a conference. And then the other was a case report. So those are two things that people could think about doing that are really easy to do and put on your application, as long as you have just a little bit of, you know, willpower to get it done. Cause obviously you're in rotations and it's really hard to find the time to study and work and go to the gym and eat and, you know, commute and all that. And I totally understand that, but, you know, start in your second year, start in your third year. Don't wait, you know, until your fourth year. And now you're trying to scramble to figure all this stuff out, you know? Yeah. I think that was probably communicated the last part of your question.
That was very good. It was very good rundown of, you know, where you fall on that USMLE scale without obviously scaring people with a specific score. And then segueing into your LOR writers, who they were and why you selected them. I think that's super important because we always think we must only have LORs from people within that specialty to make a big difference. But the content of your LOR sometimes could be actually more influential than anything in allowing the end user, the reader, the program director to review your application from a more holistic standpoint. So one thing that you didn't talk about was personal statement as well. How did you plan around that for a Red Onc match? Especially because obviously you're applying to Red Onc, but then you end up having to do a transitional year.
So yeah, as I mentioned, you know, I didn't really discover that I wanted to do radiation oncology until my clinical years started. But you know, that says a lot about just like, you know, every school has like their specialty fair, their club fair, and you go walk around and you see all the specialty, you know, interest groups and all that. And of course there was no radiation oncology in my school, obviously, but I did always know even back then that I wanted to work in cancer and treat patients with cancer. I always knew that. So I did know that I always knew what I wanted to communicate in my personal statement. And that was mostly about, you know, this situation, that the circumstance in my life where my mother was afflicted with the disease and it took her life. You know, I saw her in the hospital being treated by, you know, hem-oncs, medicine oncologists, and rad-oncs, radiation oncologists. You know, I was able to share a lot of things in the personal statement that communicated what I saw in those doctors and how they emulate what I hope to provide to the specialty. And that's sort of overall what I communicated in the personal statement using this circumstance in my life, as cliche as that may be, you know, but that was really it. And I knew for a long time, basically 4 years, what I was going to say in that personal statement. And I took time to write it and, you know, read it a lot and edited it a lot and was very happy when I finally sent it in ERAS.
You know, first off, sorry about your mom. Was not aware of that. Obviously would not have broached the topic if it was going to be anything sensitive for you to talk about.
Oh no, not at all.
For sharing that. I think that what I'm hearing in your story and how other people can learn from it is we all have those experiences that truly instigated why we wanted to become doctors of some sort. And we don't get to forget that because we're now applying for residency. And we don't get to neglect that because we've already finished medical school and it's no longer applicable. It's always going to be applicable because even in your clinical practice, it's those instances and reasons and circumstances that would allow you to make sound decisions on the difficult days. Because then you remember why you're doing what you're doing, and it's no longer about a potential paycheck. It becomes about humanity and what you want to see in the world. So I really think that that's a very strong, compelling reason for all of us to be reflective on our lives and say, what are those things that truly motivated us to go down this path? And we can always try to find how it relates to the specialty we're applying into, so that we can bring even more meaning into how our life came to be the way that it is. And I think the key here is, guys, for you guys listening, find how you can relate that circumstance to where you're going. If you can create a bond, a relationship, a tie, a cause and effect, an association, if you can tie that in and tell the story, I think you would be able to reach your audience and compel them to want to meet you. Obviously, that's in addition to your application packet. And I think the personal statement also allows to add a personal touch to maybe just a number, which is a USMLE score, or the professional opinion of a highly sought out professor or preceptor. This adds, you know, a more softer edge to the applicant. It adds an emotional edge to the applicant. And we're all human, right? We all have an emotional brain. We all have a limbic system. So a part of us is going to light up when we read such stories. So kind of segueing from personal statements. So we've kind of already touched on USMLE for RadOn, LORs and learning from your experience, kind of what you did. And we've even touched on personal statements. And you actually even shared about experiences, which I liked, that you maximized all 10 experiences and you had extracurriculars. A lot of people applying IMGs, we don't even regard extracurriculars as important, but that's what makes us who we are. Like fundamentally, yes, you have US clinical experiences in your rotations. You can highlight that. No problem with that. But if you have other social activities, humanities, arts, music, literature, things that you have done that are unique, slam that on there. Like I tell you, you'll never be wrong. It's actually going to be a discussion opener in some interviews. It's going to be, an intrigue factor. We all love a certain amount of diversity in someone's life. And you're actually given a holistic perspective when you do include those extracurriculars as well. So good job on that. So another question I have is, some people listening are going to have the question of, well, why are you doing a traditional here? How did you apply when you had to do sort of match two times in two places? Can you walk them through that process of applying into a transitional and an advanced specialty?
Yeah, so I just firstly want to say amen to everything you just said. What you just said is the secret. Like that is the secret. Just be you, be yourself. If you cook and you love cooking, that's your hobby, find a way, go, find a way to make that more of a mission. Turn your passion into like a little bit of a mission. It doesn't have to be like a full force, like you're starting a business and all this, but go find a soup kitchen, do whatever, like, 'cause it's cooking, find something where you're showing your passion in that way. So yeah, amen to that. It was a little complicated when it came to initially just looking at everything. Okay, I know I have my advanced program that I'm applying for. I know I have my prelim program that I'm applying for. And for those that don't know, I'm going to make it really easy. So everything is going to be available for you in ERAS. That's where you're going to see all the programs and apply to the programs. Your preliminary year, that's your intern year, and that can either be prelim surgery, prelim medicine, or transitional year. Those three things. Those are your three options for your intern year. So that means when you go to rank in RMP, after you've done all your interviews for transitional years and your advanced specialty, you will have the ability to rank your prelim ones and your advanced ones. That was something, what I just said, that was so hard for me to understand and find that information, but that's how easy it is, what I just said. And that works, that's how it works for every advanced. So once you get to, the NRMP and you start making your list, that's when it gets really complicated. But thankfully, NRMP has videos that walk you through it and it's all good. But that's essentially what you should expect if you're going to apply to a advanced specialty.
Right. And I agree with you that NRMP has, like, the tutorials they have, it's amazing what they have out there.
Agreed.
A lot of people don't even know that it exists, and it surprises me because I'm like, NRMP has given you guys the cheat sheets. Like,
Yeah.
they've told us everything. They even tell you, like, how to rank, and they're not doing that to deceive you. A lot of people will text me, like, should I really follow that? Yes. Like, it's there
Yeah.
for a reason. So,
Right.
yes, NRMP's tutorials are they're the GOAT. So you should definitely check them out if you haven't already. But I agree with you that if you are able to follow their instructions on their tutorials, then it becomes easier. But I think to clarify, because some people listening are non-Caribbean medical students, so they have an even lesser idea of the US residency system in general. I think as Caribbean medical students, we kind of like hear from our seniors, our schools. So you have an idea about NRMPE. But for anyone who's new to the idea, NRMP is where we go to rank our program. When you're applying to an advanced specialty, you obviously would apply to your secondary specialty. You'll need to find a preliminary. So you also have preliminary applications sent out. You'll be using the same application. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I never did an advanced specialty. But from my understanding, the applicant uses the same application for their advanced specialty to apply into the preliminary or transitional program. Is that
That's right.
correct? Okay. So you don't have to create two separate applications for it because one is a known 12-month program that is designed to act as a basis, foundational for anyone going into an advanced specialty. And the reason they do that typically is because advanced specialties are focused on a niche area of medicine. So they want you to go get your general medicine year somewhere else and then come in and you go in on your medical physics, proton therapy, and all the things that you're learning in radiation oncology. And this applies to all advanced specialties like dermatology, urology has some advanced, radiology, interventional radiology. Those are all specialties that typically would have you go out, anesthesia, some of them do as well, But you go out and do a 1 year at a secondary, even PM&R is another one. Do a 1 year preliminary or TY year, not both. And then you complete that and then you jump right into your niche specialty. And they do that again to create a foundational understanding of medicine because you'll be doing a lot more primary care in that first year before going into your niche. So that's for the listener who's like, what's a TY or transitional year or a prelim year? That's really what it is. And prelim years could be medicine, pediatrics, surgery. Transitional year is typically like a modge podge of a variety of specialties is the main difference there. So as we begin to round up, what would you say is your mantra for having been successful in this last match?
Being successful. You know, I love philosophy. I should have double majored in philosophy because this is part of my recreation. Actually, this is the shirt I'm wearing is based on something that I did do for, you know, in preparation for my ERAS application, everything, starting a website where I can communicate these sort of things. So I'm constantly reading philosophy, trying to understand our world, why, how, what. And I guess just to take a departure from all of that really fancy stuff, I pretty much just kept telling myself to show up. And it was just like, oh, you know, it was just like you're working hard, you're in rotations, you're studying, you got comp, you've got step two, you've got OET, you've got everything is happening. Like you're still waiting on your letter writer to get back to you. You're waiting for an evaluation to come in. Like it's just absolute chaos. And the last thing that you want to do are meet and greets, you know, interviews, like all that stuff. You know, it's going to be webinars. It's going to be tough, but you really should consider that every single one of these things that you do is going to part in the big picture, whether you think it or not. And that goes from just, you know, everything from reaching out to people. Like I had a guest lecturer for my radiology elective, and I reached out to this guy, and I'm so glad I did. He is an incredible person who's become a mentor for me. And that all of that is, you know, just me going above and beyond and just showing up, like just doing it because I know deep down that is what I'm supposed to do. That is how these things are going to happen is if I just keep showing up. I don't want to do this meet and greet. I've done three this week. You know, they're all like an hour and a half, 2 hours each. And you're going to have to sit there and you're going to have to talk and you're going to have to smile a lot and you're going to have to be really tired, but you're going to have to not show that you're tired, you know, and doing all of that. And I know it's exhausting, but you got to show up. And that's what I did. I just showed up.
Absolutely. I'm here for showing up and showing up when you don't feel like it, showing up when you feel like it, showing up when you're sad, showing up when you're happy, showing up when you're depressed and
That's
discouraged,
right.
showing up even after you get denied of taking step two because of a comp, and you still show up to your desk and you still sit there and you still study. And I think that in all, I think the people who succeed are not like always the, I mean, yeah, you need to level of brightness, but it's those who keep persisting in spite of,
100%.
because a lot of times you could be smart, book smart, but if you don't show up to the race, you're not gonna win it. You have to be in the race to win it. And I keep telling my students that all the time inside the IMG roadmap. A couple of things I wanted to touch on, which I'm trying to like not keep us so long, but at the same time, I have all these questions.
Please.
I want to know,
Love
and I'm
it.
sure people want to know. They want to know what you were doing on MTV.
Ah.
Tell us. So we're going to let that slip by. No. Tell us.
So it wasn't my face or anything, but it was just our music, you know, my band, you know, one of many that I was taking very seriously during this sort of hiatus between graduating undergrad and starting medical school that I mentioned. And yeah, it just, you know, we were taking it very seriously and we had managers and we had, you know, we were professional and essentially we were approached to have our music broadcasted on the radio and put on MTV and we met up at our drummer's house and we just turned on the TV and we're just waiting for the premiere of this episode. I think it was like Real World or something or Road Rules Challenges or I don't know, some show. Yeah. And anyway, so it just, you know, it premiered on the show and it played and it was really cool. And then, you know, we started hearing our, you know, getting fans and people like reaching out to us from all over the place, you know, just saying, hey, I heard your song in Hollister or like, you know, whatever. And it's like, oh, that's really cool. We got put on a lot of like big popular playlists and stuff like that. And it was a great way to sort of close that chapter because music, like I said, it will always be there. I can just do music anytime. And I hope to continue making music. I'm making music I made music today. I plan to keep making music and doing music and expressing myself in that way. And, you know, again, I think everyone has their mission and their passion. Some of us have a lot of each. And, you know, never stop doing either of those. That's how you're going to thrive through all this, is like retaining that, whatever that is, that joy that that activity gives you is what's going to get you through, especially during step two studying. I don't know about you, but it was so hard for me. It was so hard for me. And one of my friends who is a classmate and basically a mentor, he was like, you know, if you're not like really, really, really sad, like really sad during this time, you're not studying hard enough. So I was pretty sad. You know, I was working hard, but I still would make time to like do a little music here and there, play guitar, you know, all that stuff. It's the same stuff everyone says. Unfortunately, they're like, you know, make time to go to the gym and make time to eat right and all that. And of course that's true. But, you know, I definitely believe in hobbies, and you know, finding something to tinker with will really help you relieve your mind from just that, the monotony of beating it with facts and memorization and all that, you know? So, and actually to share on that last topic, to share a quote from Seneca, it's difficulties strengthen the mind as labor does the body. And it's like, you know, you just, the hard work, you know, the hard work is worth it. It's difficult, but pushing through it is how you gain strength, right? That's what labor does to the body. It gives you strength. And that's what difficulties do to the mind. They make you stronger. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I love quotes by Seneca.
Amazing.
I have felt close to me over the years. Always been, you know, sort of a stoic at heart. I find that to be a method through life. So, you know, a lot of people don't know that we actually were supposed to do a live session on Instagram, and the internet will let us be great. And
right.
So that's how we ended up making a podcast. Actually, we started out with a podcast and then live. And so, you know, this is the redo of something that should have happened on Instagram. But I'm happy that we did it here, because it's going to live on a lot longer and the shelf life of an Instagram life. But people are going to want to know, you know, how do we get in contact with Dr. Justin Marrera? How do we ask him follow-up questions? Because we only had 45 minutes to record. I still have tons of questions. I wanted to even dive deep on, you know, how do you feel when you feel a comp? Because I feel like that's an area that a lot of Caribbean medical students get stuck at, and it becomes a stronghold for us down the road because we can never get over the fact that we were held back, you know. Yeah. But and you can touch on that before we go into sharing your contacts, or you could do it all at once.
Yeah, I mean, you know, during interviews, you know, you have some interviews that are interesting. There'll be people that they'll tell you straight up, I'm not part of the committee. I'm here to give a review of our conversation today, you know. And so we'll start talking, and they don't know anything about international medical schools. You know, when I start telling them that I played soccer there, and or like whatever it is the topic is, and telling them that I lived in Barbados for 2 years, they don't know what that means, or like, you know, am I, so like what school, you know, like is this legal, you know? And what I always just gently try to communicate is just the difficulties in not only being accepted, because I think that that's the reason why a lot of international medical students are choosing that route, at least US IMGs are choosing that route, you know, is based on some sort of issue with admission. Not always. Some people are choosing to do this, which is beautiful. It's great. But, you know, there's a lot of folks that are just, the timeline of the traditional allopathic or osteopathic route just doesn't work for them. They want a trimester situation. They want to go to school now. They don't want to wait like I did. I didn't want to wait, so I just did it. And, you know, what I just try to communicate is just the amount of resilience that, and you should recognize this as an IMG, is the amount of resilience that is involved in what you are doing is amazing. You are choosing to go live in another country where you don't know anybody, you don't know anything, you don't know the currency, you don't know where's food, where's gas. You know, they don't have the comforts usually of America. They don't have Starbucks on the corner. They don't have Chick-fil-A. They don't have Uber Eats. And you know, you're choosing. And, you know, the whole, at least for me in Barbados as a Ross student, the whole getting things shipped to you, you know, family sending you things, you ordering something, it's weeks, it's months before you're going to see that stuff. Everything's expensive. You know, the list goes on. The people there, the culture there, you don't know anything about what you're doing. And for you to do that is really amazing. And it shows your resilience, and it shows you have grit and perseverance. The things that, you know, we're saying are basically the keys in what are ultimately your success, that, you wouldn't say no and you wouldn't stop pushing forward. And I just think recognizing that and owning that is really important. And, you know, again, you're probably going to hear this in your interviews. You may hear that, you know, they don't know what international medical school is, and you'll have to tell them. And, you know, you should try your best just to share whatever your story is. You know, for me, it was during COVID. And so that I had all kinds of very interesting things happening during that time before I came back. But yeah, so anyway, you know, it could continue on forever, honestly, but just to share my contact information quickly, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Please get in touch with me on Instagram. My handle is just my first and last name. Literally, that's it. No dots, no spaces, no underscore. At Justin, M-O-R-E-I-R-A, Morera. And then you can also contact me by email, which is probably the next best way, which is just, again, my first and last name, Justin, M-O-R-E-I-R-A, Morera, at live, live.com.
All right. We'll have your Instagram information and all Dr. Morera's contact information down in the show notes, guys. So go ahead and create that connection with them. Ask those questions, because I know a lot of people listen and you have secondary and tertiary questions that come up, and they'll send me a message. And I'm like, the contact information's in the show notes. Reach out to that person. They're better at answering their life questions than I am. I'm here either ways to be a support to you guys. So stay tuned for our very next episode that will be coming up within the next week. Thank you for being on here, Dr. Justin. We appreciate
Thanks for having me.
All best wishes on your next adventure into residency.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right.
Look at you. I'm so proud of you for listening until the very end. And because of that, you deserve a reward. And I want you to go right now to drninaloom.com and download any of my free ebooks, whether it's for electives or clinical rotations, or even just whatever trials come your way as you navigate your IMG journey. Stay tuned for another episode coming up next.